This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. Today's program is a discussion from the perspective of Hawaii's Korean community of U.S.-North Korea relations in the wake of last week's summit.
And this is Catherine Cruz, and today we'll be talking with Francis Park, president of the National Unification Advisory Council of the Republic of Korea, the Hawaii chapter. He is a first-generation immigrant and longtime Honolulu businessman. We'll also be talking to Ducky Lee Moribayashi, a retired city planner who is with the Korean Immigration Institute here in Hawaii and who authored many books on the subject. And if you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about the possibilities for Korea's reunification after more than 70 years. You can join the discussion, too, by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands.
Francis, we were talking earlier in the show about post-summit reactions, and you were saying that reunification is kind of a far-off goal, but you would settle for peace between North and South Korea in the short term.
Yes, it does. The unification for the Korean people has been a national dream for the last six and a half decade, ever since the Korean War. Mm-hmm. However, that the unification is not immediate reality at this time because there was tensions and the threats of the North Korean. So our priority we put into peace and the stability of the Korean Peninsula. So let's put the unification, although it's been a national dreams and hopes, so put it at the second priority at this time, and we all support for the peace effort at this time.
Have your hopes been raised by recent events?
Of course, because it's been just a dreaming. Now it's more likely a reality. And actually, we are far closer to the real unifications.
And Francis, maybe you can share with our listeners this advisory council. How is it set up, and how is it that we have one here in Hawaii?
National Unification Advisory Council is a constitutional institute based on the Korean National Constitution. And it is an advisory body under the direct control of the president. And as a pan-national unification body heading toward the peaceful unifications, we are continuously engaged in advisory and recommendation activities to gather opinions in Korea and overseas and build a national consensus and implement a successful unification policy. We do have about 43 overseas chapters. We are one of them. And Hawaii chapters actually cover not just Hawaii, but to cover Guam, Saipan, and American Samoa.
So these are in cities or areas that have a large Korean American population?
That is true.
Let's welcome Ducky Moribayashi to our studio. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Can I ask you the same questions I just asked Francis Park? Or have your hopes been raised by the summit?
We're cautious about it. You know, really don't know what actually is going to take place, but it's better than the past approach.
It was quite a switch from the angry rhetoric of a couple of months earlier,
That's
isn't it?
That's true. Hawaii was really scared.
Hawaii and Guam and Japan.
That's right.
It seems as if when that language, that bellicose language is being thrown around, it got very, very specific at one point. We were going to fire missiles at this site, these sites on Guam, and I don't know, tensions were raised. Are you convinced by the recent change? You know, do you believe it?
Let's put it this way. We are really cautious about how they are to this independent very different personality are going to take, you know, approach in this matter.
Why cautious?
Because it didn't work in the past so many years. We've been separated for over 70 years. So after the Korean War, it's another, you know, 50, 60 years. So
we'll see.
Optimism has been really went up a little bit, but not quite sure.
And you shared with me that you were born in North Korea.
I was born in Pyongyang, 1941, so a long time ago.
When did you come to Hawaii?
Oh, come to Hawaii in 1968, so it's been 50 years.
When did you leave
North Korea? Family came down to South 1946, right after it was divided.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we went through the Korean War and lived in Seoul and Busan and all that. He came to the United States in 1963 in the mainland to attend the school. And after the school, came to Hawaii in 1968. So Hawaii's been my home since 68.
And Francis, you mentioned that your parents were from North Korea originally.
Yes, they're from North Korea, and they fled to South Korea right before war. And
he's younger than I am, so.
Of course, but I was born in the last year, which is 1953. It was
the Korean War.
Yeah, I was born, and I think the Korean War armistice was agreed about a month after I was born.
I visited North Korea in 1998, so, you know, it's not.
What was that like?
See, 98, Korea was really needed everything. They were in, you know, starvation. And at that time, Korean Methodist churches, several of Methodist churches in Hawaii got together and collected some funds, supplied whatever funds to run a noodle factory in Hwanghae province. So a year later, I was sort of asked to go visit how the noodle factory is running.
How was it?
Noodle factory was there, and flour was there, but I didn't see it was running. They showed me the list of people who took the noodles, but never saw it was distributed or anything, but we trust they did it.
But you didn't see a complete demonstration of what you were supposed to see, sounds like.
You mean in North Korea?
Yeah.
I saw different scene. I mean, there wasn't any demonstration or anything like that. I saw the military workers actually working and repairing the roadways. I saw people going around looking for food.
But people were starving in 1998. That's what you're saying.
That was the difficult time. You know, 1990s was the really hard time for North Korea. And after that, they received, I guess, economy got a little better than that. But I guess 90s was the really hit badly at that time. Yeah.
Can you get accurate information from inside North Korea?
I don't have any accurate information, but what the docu was mentioned that she personally went to North Korea. But I think during those, even right now, I mean, whoever invited into North Korea, they're not going to show everything, and everything in, you know, performed in a secret mission. So they show, I guess, assume that she saw the best of the best in North Korea.
What they wanted.
Right. And then the reality is it's probably beyond our imaginations.
In what way?
In a personal, a humanitarians. And I know the KJU's father, KJI regimes, it's the hardest time that they're having all their properties and, you know, the food shortage, and you know, they're having a hard time, difficult times through. So if she was visiting during those days, is I think, you know, it was, even though they show a best of best, it's a, you know, terrible situation.
We have a pretty sizable Korean community in Hawaii, and we're going to ask members of that community, in fact, anyone who has a comment to share their perspective, by calling us. You can reach us from Neighbor Islands at 877-941-3689. On Oahu, you can reach us by just calling 941-3689, but we certainly welcome your phone calls. And we've, Catherine yesterday talked to members of the Korean community about the summit, got a variety of responses. Let's hear a couple of those. We'll start with Deborah, who's been tracking the events.
We kind of worry about it now.
You don't trust him?
No. No, I don't trust him.
You have relatives in Korea?
Yeah, a lot of relatives in Korea. My nephew and niece, things, you know. They worry about it too. They are worried. Yeah. They're not happy now. Yeah, me too also.
Just worry.
Yeah, just worry, yeah. Okay. We don't know in the future how Kim Jong-un change mind, you know. We cannot trust them, yeah, all this time. I'm 72 years old, yeah. But they only war, you know, and then, so.
You want peace.
Yeah.
What's your name, sir?
Michael Kim.
And so what do you think about this meeting that we just had?
I see them shaking hands and coming to agreement. Yeah, so I guess, you know, just they're trying the best they can do, you know, anybody, you know. So everybody's trying to do the best they can do. So.
Are you hopeful?
Yeah, I'm kind of hopeful, yeah.
So. Do you have any relatives back there still?
Yeah, I got cousins and uncles and stuff.
Anybody in North Korea?
Yeah, some people, and maybe some friends, yeah, so, you know. Like everybody's doing, trying their best, huh?
So little by little.
Yeah, one step at a time. So.
What do you think? Are you hopeful that something, some good will come of this meeting?
I think so. I hope so. We just think about that. We hope it turn out good.
Mm-hmm. And your name?
My name is Cho.
We hear that theme again and again, Catherine, about can we trust what we've heard?
Yes, because we were just, coming off of, a year or so of just really extreme rhetoric and lots of fear that was spread out across the Pacific. And so you don't know what to trust, and you worry.
Because of that, I guess it's because of the last history of the dialogues between South and North Korea were set up. And I guess they breaking the dialects, and then they did not keep the promise. So I think this is coming from the trauma coming from past history. But I think this time, my personal opinion is just different, because Kim Jong-un has been educated in the Western country, and he know what's the Western culture. So, and based on the information of what their situation right now, they need to have the way to resolve and have a solution for our current situation. And it's been maintained the tension between North Korea and the United States. I think he have to come up with some sort of solution. I guess that's what all the summit came as a solution. And I also looking at the Panmunjom summit and the Singapore summit, looking as a one, I think is the overall solution is coming from there. So I know the concerns from the Korean community, but I think it's going to be better for it in the future.
We did have the Olympics there, and there's, signs that maybe there was a thaw, but people obviously worry because they don't want to see their hopes dashed, I guess.
Yeah, well, still a lot of people are worried and concerned, but I think overall reaction of the Korean, the local Koreans in Republic of Korea, I guess this is a majority of them are supporting for current movements.
And Dookie, you've written a number of books about the Korean experience here in Hawaii, including one that looked at the history of Syngman Rhee. Can you talk about our place in Hawaii with Korean history?
Well, let me just point out an interesting fact that our Barack Obama was Hawaii-born and proud Hawaii, you know, son, mm-hmm. president. But he lived here only 15 years, whereas Syngman Rhee lived 25 years before he became the president of the Republic of Korea.
In Honolulu. So,
yeah, he lived in Honolulu, mm-hmm. Including some Hilo, I mean the Ola in Big Island. Mm-hmm. But anyway, overall, he was the longest Hawaii-living person to become a president. So that's sort of an interesting part of it. Syngman Rhee came to Hawaii in 1913, February. He settled here. And immediately he attended the Methodist Annual Conference. He became the leader of a Methodist church, not only among Korean churches, but overall Methodist churches in Hawaii. Of course, he had a doctorate and a from Princeton, and he was a great educator. So he became the principal of a Korean boarding school run by a Methodist mission over here in Hawaii. It opened in 1906. So he immediately changed the school name, the Korean Central School, to Zerbo's, announced that it is a center of a Korean community, so Central Korean Central School. He immediately admitted a girls' school also to the boys' school. So he had some conflict with the women's mission who supported the establishing the school. Anyway, 1915, he opened his own Korean girls' seminary. It was independent from the Methodist mission. And 1918, that school was so popular, Korean parents asked him to accept the boys in the Korean girls' school. Mm. So he accepted some boys in 1918.
Wow.
So it's a reverse. He went to principal of boys' school, you know, admitted the girls. Now the girls' school, and he admitted the boys. So he changed the organization into co-ed 1918 and named it Korean Christian Church. And he rented the Wailai, the present Aliolani Elementary School site. That was the first site of this Korean Christian Institute. Later it moved to Kalihi Valley. That site is the current Kalihi Elementary School site. That school was operated until 1947. The land was sold in 1950. By then, he was already president in the United States. Anyway, in addition to the running the educational institute, he also was the main leader of the church. And later on, he's opened up, organized the Korean Christian Church, which is located on Lilia Street right now, with a Korean building facade and that. In addition, he organized a Korean YMCA in 1914, and he became an honorary member, trustee of a Nuanu YMCA. So you can see actually his picture in Nuanu YMCA boardroom right now. So he really worked in various aspects and learned and practiced, and in between he tasted the failure of it, and he was disappointed and all that. In addition to all these things, he organized the so-called political party and Dongjihui, and he realized that these political activities need a lot of financial support. In order to have a financial support from the people, he thought he has to raise the financial level of a Korean community. So he opened a development company in Ola, Big Island, called the Dongji Village.
So folks may not realize the deep roots that
that's
he
right.
has here.
That's
this
right.
President
for 25
of Korea.
Years, he went in various aspects. He tried and all that. So when he became the president of Republic of Korea, he advocated a mandatory educational system. So up to high school, it's all free, public school system. And he initiated the military chaplain system. Or land, you know, he redid the land system. All these things comes from, I believe, it comes from the sort of practice, the experience he gained in Hawaii, of course.
And we're talking about Syngman Rhee, president
yeah, Syngman
of
Rhee,
South
that's right.
Korea.
Yeah. He became
during
the first
Korean War until when?
1960. He became a first founding president of Republic of Korea, mm-hmm. 1948, mm-hmm. August 15. And he resigned 1960, April 1960. So after that, he actually came back to Hawaii, 1960 May, and he lived there another 5 years. A total 30 years he spent in Hawaii.
Right, so you made the point earlier when we were talking last week that that Hawaii is really kind of the birthplace of Korean independence.
That's correct.
So it's a really incredible history that people may have forgotten.
Well, the reason why Syngman Rhee came to Hawaii, he well realized that Hawaii is not a politically geographically important place. He knew that. But here has the largest Korean population. At that time, was a little over 4,500. It was the largest point in the United States. In the mainland, close to 3,000 people all scattered around from California to New York. So Hawaii was the sort of a concentrated area of the Korean population. So he chose Hawaii to organize, and he prepared to sort of establish a new country.
Related to President Syngman Rhee, he was a founding president of Korea, and he was the contributing to establishing a United States and the Republic of Korea alliance in 65 years ago. And this year, in our community, I mean, nationwide, the Korean community is commemorating for the 65th anniversary of Korean War Armistice Agreement, and as well as this Korean, U.S. And Republic of Korea alliance. So he was actually a person who contributing to initiate that alliances.
How difficult for South Korea was rebuilding in the aftermath of the Korean War?
Well, 1960, when I came to the United States, mm-hmm. We were poorer than Philippines at that time.
In South Korea?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh. And we allowed to bring only $20 as a student, you know, mm-hmm. going abroad.
It's not much.
That's right. So we were poor.
Yeah, there was a lot of story about how successful, and then the Republic of Korea now are becoming a economically booming countries. But like myself, I left Korea like almost 40 years ago, and I was born in a refugee camp. My parents were in temporary staying in a refugee camp, and I was born in there. And in my youth years, it's a really poor, mm-hmm. and you know, I can't really imagine in these days is that there was like food shortage, and there's lack of clothes and kind of stuff. You know, these days is, I guess, as a young generation will not understand, it cannot understand how it, you know, bad was. But I'm so proud about Korea's. You know, modern Korea these days is they're really being grown up as economic power countries. And I guess this is a good lesson for us. And those suffers is being a energy and turning to energy to build a a modern country these days.
You're listening to The Conversation on HPR One, and we're hoping to hear from our listeners about their reactions to last week's U.S.-North Korea summit. We have two representatives of Hawaii's Korean community with us, Francis Park, whose voice you just heard, of the Unification Advisory Council, and Duki Murabayashi, who's born in North Korea and is the author of several books on Korean immigration to Hawaii. The numbers you can use to reach us are 808-941-3689 on Oahu, 1-877-941-3689 on neighbor islands. We'd like to hear from members of the Korean community, but we'd like to hear from anyone with a reaction to the events of the last couple of weeks.
And Duki, I know we were talking, you were saying that, yeah, there's a generational gap, you know, the older Koreans who remember the stories and the hardships way back when might have a different view of the summit versus our younger people, like you mentioned, Francis. You know, I mean, folks know what K-pop and Gangnam Style, right? but share some of what you know in our community.
What do I know? The Korean immigrants worked hard. But when you actually take a look at what other immigrants, I mean, Korean immigrants went to different country, for instance, Manchuria and Russia, Vladivostok area like that, and later on to Japan, I guess people in Hawaii worked hard and they suffered, but relatively they're better off. But because of they had this national goal to be independent from the Japanese occupation, they really worked hard to support the independent movement. So when you take a look at it, Chinese immigrants here and Japanese immigrants, of course, their numbers are much larger than Korean immigrants. But Koreans really did not accumulate the financial wealth just because they had to spend, they had to dedicate a lot of the financial means to support the independent movement. Yet, they didn't forget educating their children because from the beginning they realized that they lost their country to Japan because people didn't have enough education. So therefore, the education is the roots of the prosperity. So that's why the school organized in 1906 by the Methodist Mission, people asked the Hawaii Methodist Mission to establish a school here. It's not only for the elementary school-age children. It was for the youth. Those who came in 18 years or 19 years old, even 20, who didn't have the modern education, who didn't know any English. That's what they wanted to education. And for them, education was the basic, the most important aspects of their life. So by 1970, census shows the Koreans in Hawaii has the highest level of education background. That's not the new immigrants started coming after 1965. So that means that's the population came from 1903. So that much you can see the first immigrant, they devoted their children to educate their children, you know.
As a means to achieve independence.
That's correct.
Having to do with Korea's long and difficult relationship with Japan, and you just alluded to that. Could you tell me a little more about that?
Japan occupied the Korea became a protectorate status of Japan 1905, mm-hmm. and became a colony in 1910. Mm-hmm. Correct.
This is a historical background. I think a lot of people. It's helpful to a lot of people.
So, the Korean immigrant who came to Hawaii between 1903 and 1905, They didn't have a country to return to. They came with a Korean imperial government the passport.
And that government ceased to exist.
It ceased to exist. They didn't have a passport.
Yeah.
So 1910, after some people wanted to return, visit Korea like that, they had to apply for Korean Japanese passport at the Japanese consulate.
Well, give us just a thumbnail sketch of the rest of the of the 20th century from 1910. So now Korea is a colony of Japan.
That's right.
What happens then?
So there are a lot of struggle, and they, you know, I guess 1919, March 1st movement, you know, that's the historical event. Koreans revolted, and the 80,000, population, particularly youth, went on the street demonstrating for the independence. That's the beginning of independence, public independence movement. And when they heard that news, week later, second week of March in Hawaii, women in Hawaii organized a Korean Women's Relief Society. They had two specific objects. Number one, to support those who are wounded and those who died, the families of those who died during that independence movement, they're going to support. Number two, they are going to support some other activities. So what they did, first fundraise, by the way, the Korean Provisional Government was set up after the 1919 March 1st movement. Korean Provisional Government set up in Manchuria and Seoul and all other. Several provisional government got together and became the provisional government in Shanghai. That was April of 1919.
Mm-hmm.
When this Korean Relief Society, Women's Relief Society in Hawaii, got hold of an independence declaration as well as provisional government cabinet list like that, they made a poster. There's 3,000 posters. It was printed, advertiser company, in color, with a Korean flag and Korean national flower, Korean hibiscus all around. And they printed 3,000 copies, and they made a profit of $2,500. They sent $2,000 to Korea to help those who were wounded and, you know, the families who died during that movement. Since then on, that Korean Women's Relief Society worked hard, raised funds. They raised more than $250,000 until 1945.
When you talk about people who were wounded and relief for people who were
wounded
by whom? By the Japanese?
The Japanese police.
Occupying
Japanese
government.
Yeah, Japanese police and Japanese armies who whipped and, you know.
These are people who were protested for Korean independence and were punished by the
in
Japanese
Korea.
Colonial government
that's
in
right.
Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, I'm not sure.
Because...
Yeah. You know, we just need to give the historical background because there
that's
are
right.
people of all kinds of people listening. We'd like to hear from some listeners. If you call us, you can reach us at 808-941-3689 on Oahu, 1-877-941-3689. We're discussing the aftermath of the North Korean-U.S. summit, its effect particularly on the Korean community of Hawaii.
You know, I have to mention, I didn't realize the rich history of Syngman Rhee and here in Hawaii. And my neighbor, Greg Pye, shared that Syngman Rhee stayed at his parents' place up on Wilhelmina Rise when the hill was all in carnation fields. And he shared with me how I think there was a parting of the ways at one point, but the passion and the politics in the community around that time was just so strong.
That's right. Greg Pye's father became the ambassador to Japan during the Syngman Rhee's time, and his mother was one of those really, really active in Korean community. And his pie, yeah. So well remembered in the Korean community.
Right. So he shared that when the hill was in Carnation Fields, they would, you know, take all the flowers down to Mauna Kea Street and the Aloha Tower Marketplace for the lay sellers. But just a really rich textual history of our community and the significance of the politics at the time.
The Carnation Farm, about 1,000 Korean families raised the carnation, including Pai's family and the Wilhelmina Rice. Some other people raised in the Lilia area also. And I guess they are the ones who left the sugar plantation early and had a little bit of financial means to do their own so-called their own business.
Kind of break away from the plantations
a little bit. Sir. And, of course, Inez Pai was educated woman, too. Again, education.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested in the way you tied education to independence and to, you know, breaking the yoke of colonialism.
Well, I guess illiteracy is almost zero in Korea right now due to, you know, the sort of a policy Syngman Rhee set up in Korea, a mandatory education system. And during the Korean War, actually, some youth, sort of a modern education was of the modern leaders was actually done in America. Because during the Korean War, a lot of people came after the war. America was the place to get the higher education. So it's one time Eastwood Center has the highest Korean the student population over there who got the scholarship, Eastwood Center scholarship over there. And in Korea, not now, but the 1990s, even 1980s, 90s, like that, really the leaders of government as well as university like that, they formed the Hawaii Mafia, so-called Hawaii Mafia, because they're the graduate of University of Hawaii, got the degree from UH. So it was very popular, actually.
We have a caller on the line from Kailua Kona. Paul?
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask what the members of the Korean American community think of the administration's unilateral decisions to stop military drills with the South Korean, and also what seems to be that they're constantly bypassing and shutting the South Korean government out of the discussion.
That's a good question. Thank you, Paul.
Okay. I know that there were the cancellation of the joint militaries exercise, and it draws a lot of concerns. And my personal opinion as well, it's going to be unbalancing the regional security. And my biggest concern is disturbance of the U.S. and Korea alliance. So we've been working together, and then, in terms of the government policies, I have to support what their decision is in both U.S. government and the Korean government. But obviously, yes, it's a draw a lot of concern, and you know, hopefully, we have a solution for that.
Well, there've been a lot of questions raised in the wake of that. How important was the cancellation of the exercises, and also the fact that this was the Singapore summit was a U.S. North Korea summit, not a U.S. South and North Korea summit. And you know, Francis, you read the papers from Seoul every day, and I'm wondering
yes.
what the reaction was on the ground in South Korea to, you know, the South Korea is being excluded from those talks.
Well, I think as a lot of people agree with my concern, but I think it's kind of calmed down to observe what's going on next and what will be the outcomes of negotiation between the Korean government and the U.S. government. But sounds like it's going to be toward the cancellation. But I think in terms of security and the Panmunjom decoration, mm-hmm. It can be restored at any time, I think. There are some technical difficulties, I believe, but it can be come back any time, I guess.
Well, was there a lot of reaction, you know, editorial reaction when those exercises were first canceled? Were there expressions of concern in South Korea?
Yes, of course. I don't know how difficult and how deeply affecting the military and securities, but at the first that when we heard that the exercise has been canceled, and you know, I have to think about our alliances between the two countries, and I think the exercise has been pretty much provocative to the North Korean people, and
so maybe it was a good idea to cancel the exercise.
I would say I think it's premature to say anything, but the hurdle that we have to run over, and we have to remove the hurdle first.
We had a discussion of this last week on the program, and it was, we were reminded that there had been a number of provocations coming from North Korea,
yes,
on the other side, right? So, mm-hmm. So we, you know, did we give up something unilaterally with the cancellation of those?
Well, my personal opinion is, what was the outcome of a Singapore summit? There was a baseline. Without any details and without any timeline,
mm-hmm.
I think the cancellation is a little bit too premature to make decision without the details and again the timelines of the nuclear radiations. And there's a baseline, but that there's no details about it. So
it's interesting. You got to read the between lines of the newly appointed the Ambassador Harris.
He said,
pause. We need to pause a little bit and see how the North Korea will implement their...
Meaning we haven't given them up entirely.
That's what I read.
Of course.
As a new ambassador to Korea, he has to choose his words very carefully, mm-hmm. too. But
I believe he's not yet confirmed, is that
it's
right?
He's not confirmed, but it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you share your concerns about the nuclear testing that North Korea did? You know, we're hearing reports that there was a failure somewhere in it. I know it's hard to kind of verify information coming out of North Korea, but... just share your thoughts about that.
Well, the nuclear weapon is, of course, it's a threat, immediate threat to South Korea. And even though Kim Jong-un was a threat to bombing Guam and Hawaii, the part of the United States, but it's not, I don't think it's a reality. He can't really do it. But the other hand, it's immediate threat to the Korea. So it was a very sensitive, and that was, I guess, the one of the major subjects that all the summit and everything is going to progress. So South Koreans are worried about the weapon. And I guess that's the reality, and that we have to take this summit and, you know, we have to support because we need a peace and stability first. So it was a kind of sensitive things.
And your thoughts, Duke?
Well, it turns out that the experts said it will take at least two to three years to actually to get rid of all the nuclear threats and all that. So really, we have to see. We have to see what will happen. What will North Korea will do? So we don't know. So I guess the canceling the military
exercise
may be a test. See how the North Korea actually try to fulfill their
promise.
Oh, see
if we have more
That's
provocations
right.
from
That's
North
right.
Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's, you know, in the language of diplomacy, there are lots of little tests, right?
That's right.
Yeah, and also there's a relationship developing between North Korea and China. And, Japanese government wants to get involved. And, you know, it's a complex. It's a very complex issues with other countries, especially those, Russia, China.
Well, where do they figure into this discussion? You know, Japan, China, Russia, there's some powerful countries right
next
door.
We thought it's just a matter of, relationship between the South and North Korea and, United States get involved. But it's suddenly, it's everybody has interest. You know, this Japanese government wants to get involved, and China wants to get involved. In fact, Kim Jong-un actually a visiting third visit within just several months to the China, and I don't know what's his intention in behind.
It's not a sudden movement of all this in a neighboring countries. They've been controlling the North Korea ever since Korean War anyway. Because China supported send their military during the Korean War. That's how the Korean War was sort of ended. Ever since, they controlled. They supported, they controlled, North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So their interest is very deep-rooted than the general public understands. So... Mm. It's not a sudden one. And Japan was involved, and Japan claims that they are the victim of North Korea's abduction of the Japanese citizens and all that. So mm-hmm. they claim.
Is that accurate, that claim?
they abducted a lot of Japanese to North Korea. In addition to that, actually, Korean population who were living in Korean-Japanese live in Japan actually voluntarily moved to North Korea. So there were their relationship.
Why?
Well, I guess they chose North Korea. At that time, 1960s, North Korea was actually live a little better than South Korea, so they chose North Korea. And the Japanese government sort of pushed the Koreans in Japan, moved to North Korea. So,
what was the reason for the abductions? We've heard a lot about the abductions.
I guess they trained the North Koreans in teaching Japanese and whatnot. Who knows? It's a secret country, so you don't know everything what's going on over there anyway.
It really is a secret country, isn't it?
Yes.
Any final thoughts, Francis, as we wrap up?
Well, as representatives of our organizations, regardless of what's the situation developed, I like to stay, and the contributing to a tie between, a friendship between the United States and Korea, and. We like to do more activities than before. Although we did in the past, our activities is going toward the One Direction from the conservative side standing. But I think we have to observe for all consideration at this time. And I'd like to mention one thing that we're going to have 68th anniversary of the Korean War in just about a week away. And
of the end of the Korean War.
Yes. Actually, no. It's the beginning of the Korean War.
Oh, sorry.
68th of year.
June 25th.
Yeah, mm-hmm. June 25th is the anniversary day. And war ending, I think, is July by designing. Yes.
Yeah.
But our organization is going to host a appreciation night for the Korean Veteran War in this Friday. And it's a significant thing because it's, you know, considering all the happenings going around, and we like to have the event as a show of our willings and the friendships with the United States. And so we are hosting an event for this Friday with there are about 50 veterans and widows being invited for the event.
Francis, we have to go. Thanks to both our guests, Francis Park of the National Unification Advisory Council and Ducky Murabayashi, who has written several books about Korea. She's with the Korean Immigration Institute. Thanks to both of you for taking part.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for sharing your knowledge and the history, rich history of Hawaii and Korea. And we thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217.
You can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can hear the past shows at our conversation podcast at that same website. I'm Chris Vandercook.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.